Radio 5 presents the Mark Steele Solution.
Give me 30 minutes and I'll convince you of anything.
Starring Mark Steele, Tracy Russell and Pete Sinclair.
Welcome to the Mark Steele Solution, where each week I come up with a radical proposal to change all of our lives for the better. And this proposal concerns judges. Now, I'm sure we'd all agree that British judges are almost perfect. Except, it does seem a little odd, if judges are supposed to be balanced and fair, that they all seem to have the same accents. So you always hear them saying things like, "Objection overruled," or, "Are you to tell me that the defendant was drinking claret with a fish course?" We're told to assume that this is normal, but we wouldn't think it was normal if every single High Court judge in Britain went, "Hey, objection overruled, Mary, I'll read money." "I'll tell you what, man, you've got to allow the prosecution to establish where the defendant was on the night of the crime, and I'll never get finished down here and go down the club for a pint of Nookie Brown here, where you ain't got here." So what we're looking for is a way of ensuring that we get a better quality of judges, and that's why tonight's proposal is... judges should be ex-convicts. Now, of course, there might be one or two people who feel that criminals aren't the most suitable people to be judges, but the thing is, could they be less suitable than the judges we've got at the moment?
Just a minute. Who is this Gazza you refer to?
Paul Gascoigne, my lad.
Paul who?
A professional footballer, my lad.
A footballer?
Yes, my lad. Someone who plays football.
Football?
It's a game of skill played with a leather ball on a playing field, my lad.
A field?
An enclosed area of cultivated grass.
Grass?
Yes, it's that sort of green, stringy stuff that comes up through the earth.
The earth?
It's the third planet in the solar system, my lad.
My lad?
It's a silly term we use when addressing judges, my lad.
Judges?
They're just completely out of touch, so that even a simple thing like drunk and disorderly, they've just got no idea whatsoever how it happens, because they've never had to sit in a pub and then it gets late and someone goes, "Oh no, we've missed the last bus home." "They will have to walk," and you're walking home, the three or four of you, and you're drunk, and so someone starts singing, "Oh, 24 minutes, the soul cell, scare kebab." Yeah. "Oi, mate, guess a kebab. Here's shop will do us one kebab." "Yeah, Brian, that's the shoe shop, mate." But if you're a judge, you just stay drinking at the Garrick Club till 4 o'clock in the morning, and then whenever you want to go home, you just go, "Taxi," and one pulls up, and you just say, "Oh, take me home, would you, man? Oh, and stop off at King's Cross on the way, would you?" See, they all live in a completely different world. They can't even communicate to ordinary people. "Kindly describe the events that occurred in your own words."
"I'm going down the high street, right? I see this serious car, well wicked. Know what I mean? I've got a safe lady."
"Young man, the language of this court is English. Kindly use it, or I shall remove you inter alia quid quam ipso facto vivendi." The whole procedure of courtrooms is just designed to intimidate people. "All rise. All sit. All shuffle in your seats and cough.
Members of the jury, most learned counsels, Madam Usher, Lord Privy Clerk of the Honourable Twig, we are assembled in this court to try the case of the Queen versus Winslow. Call the defendant."
"Call the defendant.
Call the defendant."
"I'm here."
"Silence in court. Do not speak until you're called. Now, are you Mrs. Alison Hilda Winslow?"
"Yes."
"No, no. What is the matter with you? Face the bench, raise your right leg, take the court weasel in your left hand and stroke it under the chin with a marzipan-flavoured crisp."
"No."
"Contempt! You are
making a mockery of the law.
The judges are so out of touch, they just don't understand that to most people, court procedures don't make sense. But of course, there is one part of the population that they're not out of touch with, and that is the ones that go to the same schools, the same restaurants, the same parties at Cynthia Bain's. And that's why, if you buy a telly off a bloke in a pub, you get done for receiving stolen goods. But if you own a bank and you give them 400 million quid's worth of pension funds by Robert Maxwell, you're allowed to keep it. The judge doesn't say, you mean to tell me that you were offered this money by a fat shifty oaf with a suit and a cigar and you didn't even ask if the money was stolen? Have you ever look at the man to know he's a crook? And when someone's up for insider dealing, then you get this happening. Mr. Stout, you have been found guilty of stealing £8 million by using privileged information to invest in a high-yield offshore premium account using an elaborate system of logarithms.
Yes, Your Honour, I'm afraid I'm suffering from advanced senile dementia, as defined in the Lancet issue 346, paragraphs 1 to 22.
Oh, dear me, yes, you do sound in a terrible state. I don't think that you would benefit from a long prison sentence. Let's say 5 days detention in an open prison, known as the Members' Enclosure of Lords. Unless that be a lesson to you. It's like when they find people, they say, how much do you earn? Oh, I'll get £35 a week, gyro. Then you will pay £10 a week. 25 is quite enough to live on. But if Lord Sainsbury was had up for opening his supermarkets on a Sunday, they wouldn't say, you earn £500,000 a week, then you will pay £499,975 a week. 25 is quite enough to live on. Judges don't understand why most crimes are committed in the first place. They can see why someone might be tempted to underdeclare their tax earnings on a tax form, but when it comes to the vast majority of crimes, they've just got no idea why it is that people do it. Charlie Clark, you have been found guilty of taking and driving away. I therefore sentence you to 3 years imprisonment.
One more convict for Britain's overcrowded jails. But how did Charlie Clark's life of crime begin? At the age of 8, Charlie committed his first crime.
Here, Charlie, what are you doing after school?
Dunno. Tyre's broken.
Here. Here, let's go down the allotment with my brother. He's going to set fire to one of old Grimshaw's lettuces.
Yeah, brilliant.
Here, Ted, Bill, what's the knocked off gear?
What you got, son?
Dictionaries. German, Portuguese. Pound each. They're £4 in Smith's.
Two weeks later, Charlie's father was arrested for illegal possession of a steamroller. Whilst at the house, police noticed 24 German-Portuguese dictionaries, together with 3,000 bulldog clips and an unopened crate of drawing pins.
Said he could get him a job as a
creosote boiler.
But he just couldn't be bothered. He just hung around with those friends
who'd
busy all day.
Let's have a game of football.
I ain't got a ball.
It's all right. I know where we can get one. Come on.
It was at this point, my lad, that Charlie Clark was observed stealing a football, which was at the time being used as the match ball in the fixture Chelsea versus Leeds. The offence took place in front of 32,456 witnesses, was repeated in slow motion on Match of the Day, and was subsequently used on a question of sport in the What Happened Next section.
I never done it!
It was during his second spell in Borstal that Charlie's criminal career took a new twist.
You don't want to end up in here for nicking footballs, Charlie. I'll show you how to nick a motor.
And so, 2 weeks after his release, Charlie was back in trouble.
And you join us here at Brands Hatch. And what's this? Nigel Mansell's car has been stolen. There goes Charlie. Johnny Clark in the knocked-off 2.2-litre Ferrari, and there goes C Division through the chicane, round the left-hander.
Johnny Clark, you have been found guilty of taking and driving away. I therefore sentence you to 3 years imprisonment. But because judges don't understand the reasons for crimes, they just get more and more obsessed with bigger deterrents.
It seems to me, Peregrine, if we brought back capital punishment, there wouldn't be any murders.
Oh, I quite agree, Leonard. Just look at America.
Yes. Or do they still have murders?
Well, the odd one or two. But that's because they're too soft.
Oh, that's right. They should cut off their heads in public, like they do in Saudi Arabia.
Yes. Who do they do that to, then?
Well, the murderers.
Hey, they still have them, then?
Well, yes, but that's because they're too soft. They ought to be hung, drawn, and quartered, like they were in the old days.
Yes. Who exactly did they hang, draw, and quarter, then?
Well, the murderers, all right, but that's because they were too soft, you see.
Yeah.
Some of those hanging, drawing, and quartering places were like bloody holiday camps. Yeah. They used to have televisions, you know.
Now, there is one really important area, of course, where it matters most of all that judges are out of touch, and that's when it comes to dealing with a very important minority group, the police. Now, most people who come into contact with the police know what they're like. For instance, we all know that the police's first weapon is sarcasm, that's what they learn at training school. So they all have to stand in a line at training school going, "Can't you read?" And I got stopped by one once going the wrong way down a one-way street in Croydon, and they come up and I thought, oh no, here we go. Sign not big enough for you, sonny. And I thought, look, I know what to do, so I'm really sorry, officer, oh great constabulariness one. Oh one so regal and majestic, and who doth cleanse the very place in which we live of all the crime. How dare I breathe the same air as one as great as you? Wasn't it you who caught the Cray twins, didn't someone tell me? Because if you say that to them, then they'll let you off. But if you're rude to them, you just get a £12 fixed penalty. So who benefits from that? They do, stupid, innit? And then I thought, ah, bollocks, will have me £12 off. Hardly the sweetie, is it, officer, eh? Wanker! £12, that's a deal. Now, people give them excuses. This is the mistake that people make. They say, yes, well, they've got a uniform. Once you give someone a uniform, of course they end up sarcastic. But this is a ridiculous argument, because the milkman wears a uniform. If you forget to leave him a note one day, he doesn't come round the next day going, like sour milk, do we? So now, most people obviously know that the police behave like this, but judges haven't got a clue. It's like when there's a demonstration, the judges go along with all what's in the newspapers and say, well, it was the fault of an organised mob. Yes, there was an organised mob. They were organised and there was a mob. And they're right to a certain extent, because there is one organised mob on the demonstration, it's the police. The police are the organised ones on demonstrations, isn't it? It's not the police who turn up half an hour after it's supposed to have started going, oh, Kevin's locked the truncheons in the panda. The judge's idea of the police is that they're like the community police, the ones that come round to see the kids at school. See, judges are the only people in the world who fall for this image of coppers. That's why you get cases like the Birmingham Six, and the main piece of evidence against them was this thing called the grease test, which meant that the six had to put their hands on this machine, and if it came up positive, it meant that they had definitely, definitely been touching explosives. Or soap. Or bath towels. Or mud, or carrots, or water, or air. That's probably explosives then, I should think. Or somebody comes to court and the only bit of evidence against them is just one confession that goes, yeah, all right then, I admit it, copper. I have cracked under your perceptive questioning this. You was brilliant, just like Inspector Morse. And still the judge will say to the defendant, are you telling me that the constable made this up? No. Anyone else in the world would go, yeah, of course they made it up. But the police are to judges like your big brother is to your parents.
Give me your Lego.
It's mine.
Give me it or I'll stab you in the eye with these scissors.
No.
What's going on?
She was playing with the scissors. I told her not to.
I didn't
want to touch them. Quiet, Susan. Kevin is telling me what happened. Susan, are you expecting me to believe that Kevin deliberately stabbed you with the scissors?
Look, Dad, she admitted it.
Let me see that. Kevin is right. I've done it myself. Signed, Susan.
Oh, you're right, Dad.
That's it. Go to your room.
I didn't do it.
Well, you can stay in your room then and you can appeal in 5 years' time. So I think then that we're all agreed that the present judges are about the least suitable people that you could possibly find to do the job. They're out of touch, they don't know why or how crimes are committed, and they don't know what ordinary people get up to. And they think that the police are like PC McGarry from Trumpton. So what is the alternative? Well, before we hear the Mark Steele solution, let's hear from our regular correspondent, the voice of the cul-de-sac, Mr. Cul-de-sac.
Don't talk to me about judges, it's an outrage! They were going to build one of them courts near here, I said. I'm not having it, banging their bloody mallet, shouting silence in court all hours of the day and night. How am I supposed to get any sleep? You know where it'd end up, don't you? Oh, yes, witnesses in your living room, putting their grubby hands all over your Bible. That's where, yeah, wigs in the kitchen, blocking up the sink, exhibit A written all over your cup of tea. What do you think I am, stupid? 45 pence for a bit of apricot cake at the bus station, and they talk about justice. There isn't any, nobody cares. Look at him next door. 3 weeks he had a 50cc moped. No one's arrested him once. I had a good mind to call the army. It's an outrage. And what about that supermarket down the road? Bloody great hooligan wheeling a trolley load of stuff straight out of the door. I said, aren't you going to stop him? They said, he's paid for it, Mr. Cul-de-sac. I said, I don't care. He's doing right underneath your nose. No wonder the country's in a mess. Look at the judges they had at that country fair. 23 cucumbers. I'd never won a single prize. They said, that's because they're full of holes, Mr. Cul-de-sac. I said, well, what do you expect? We're next door's guinea pig helping himself every half an hour. It's an outrage. What about the money they spent on gallows? They could have spent that money hanging people. But why can't they catch the train robbers? How many people do you know with a train stuck in their back garden? Oh, I've a good mind to go down to Paddington and nick the 8:35 to Cardiff. Oh, different then, wouldn't it? Oh, yes. And why have they still got the Old Bailey? It's time they got a new one. They asked me to do jury service. I said, I'm not coming in doing that, wasting ratepayers' money. He's guilty. They said, that's the clerk of the court, Mr. Cul-de-sac. I said, oh, any excuse, and you let them off. I've written some letters to the High Court. Here they are. Look, dear High Court, yesterday I saw one of your judges on the news. He was a drawing. Can't you get any proper judges? Here's another one. Dear High Court, why haven't your ushers got torches? How's anybody supposed to find their seat? It's an outrage. Here's another one. Dear High Court, why? That's as far as I got with that one, but it's coming on, don't you think?
Thank you, Mr. Cul-de-sac. Now, some people think that the answer is to have more women or black judges. Well, they've got black judges in America. But have they got any more idea about the people that they're sentencing? Well, if they did, you'd get judges going like this.
Your court, rise. This is the rebel QC. What's going down?
Well, Your Honor, this guy...
Hey, shut up, pig. I ain't talking to you. I'm talking to the brother. Yo, listen up, pig. You ain't telling the truth. You ain't got no proof. You're just getting at the youth. My explanation for this situation is social deprivation and police provocation.
But, of course, what really happens is this. All rise.
Brother Judge, we've been held down too long. I'm appealing to you, brother. Throw off your white man's chains.
What you talking about, boy? You going to jail.
Brother, you going to put me away for fighting the power?
The power?
It's a ghetto term for white authority, my lad.
Ghetto?
Now, another answer is to try and persuade people not to commit crimes in the first place, which sounds like a good idea until you hear people trying it.
Hi. I'm your rehabilitation officer. Thanks for inviting me to share your maximum security cell so that we can all, like, sit in a circle and discuss ways of channeling our aggression into pottery. Now, Jimmy, would you like to lead off the workshop?
Aye, I would. Right, I'll put on her dress and pretend I'm taking you out on an awareness picnic. We'll be out of here in 5 minutes.
Well, let's go and get some potty.
Now, of course, there are some people who think that the answer lies in the past. For instance, the Harvey Proctor League for Penal Reform has issued this advice to the government in its latest information film.
We are now all too familiar with scenes like this one. A typical Sunday afternoon in the London borough of Camden.
Boss, they got Gino.
Just look at the figures. In 1741, when the ducking stool was still in use, not one person stole a car radio in the whole of Britain. Although six people confessed that they had after torture on the rack and were duly executed.
Now, there is one other alternative which might seem to have a certain appeal, which is that judges should be picked from honest people. Well, that's stupid. Because that would only work if you were dealing with other fair and honest people, but you're not. You're dealing with criminals and policemen. See, the people who would make perfect judges are people who would know when a criminal was lying and know when a policeman was lying. They'd be in touch with how people lived and talked. They'd be people who've seen the inside of poor people's houses and seen the inside of rich people's homes. They'd be people who could get into perspective a small theft from a sweet shop and a large theft from, say, a Daily Mirror pension fund. And who are the only people with all these qualifications? Criminals. The judges of the future. Just think of all the advantages. Instead of spending 10 years studying Duckworth versus Pimley, 1879, the case of the exploding sitting machine, you'd just scrap all the law books and British law would just be one little leaflet that went, 1. Don't grass up your mates. 2. Don't nick off your own. 3. Don't ever do a job with Charlie Clark. And under our system, courts wouldn't be intimidating, because if judges were ex-convicts, they wouldn't want to hear cases in the place where they were sent down in the first place. They'd have them in the back room of a pub in Stepney Green before the boxing.
All right, settle down, settle down. Come along here. Come on, we've got a lot to get through today. Come on, we've got a lot of cases up. Right, first case up, Sidney Higgins. Oh dear, your luck don't change, do it, Sid? All right, give the boy a break. Right, Sidney Higgins versus the Queen, who this week is Ada Bagnall. Now then, prosecution, what's he done?
Well, my lad, if you're...
Contempt, don't start grovelling to me with me lud and your honour and all that cake. We'll do that again in a bye in the next round.
Good, my lad.
Right, that's it, mind your lager. Sid, what are you having?
Light and bitter, please, George.
I'll go and get them, Governor.
Right, all right then, rightio, Sid. While she's gone, tell us what happened, son.
And our judges would know whether the defendants were telling the truth or not.
Look, George, I couldn't have done that warehouse. Not with my dodgy back. It's a 15-foot drop from that skylight where they got in.
That's right, Sid, it is. But it's also next door to Basher Bacon the Butchers, whose backyard happens to lead to the warehouse door, which has a padlock that you could pick with your eyes shut, and you get into Basher's by slipping him a mortgage.
You don't know that!
Yes, I do, Sidney, because that's how I got in when I'd done the same job in 1979.
Which is how I found to be a judge, incidentally. And the same thing with witnesses.
All right, prosecution, next witness.
Well, me old mate. The next witness is Norbert Chiswell.
Oh, no, it ain't. Not a Norbert. The best known grass in the whole of North London. What do the old Bill want you to finger him for, Norbert? Nicking Shergar?
And the police would have to change their approach as well.
All right, let's hear what the old Bill's got to say then. Come on.
Will me, lad? Bugger, my round, what you having? Go on.
Right, that's a cider, 2 rum and blacks and mine's a lager. Come on in, what happened?
I arrested Mr. Higgins after catching him red-handed in the warehouse with 400 crates of washing-up liquid.
Oh, dear, Sidney.
I then took him to the police station where he made a statement. All right, then, I admit it, copper. I have cracked under your perceptive questioningness. You was brilliant, just like Inspector Morse.
P.S. I am also Jack the Ripper. Sorry.
Here, Sid. What does perceptive mean?
I don't know, George. Is it a fruit?
I don't think he did write this, did he, Copper? Right, what do you reckon, jury? Did he do this warehouse?
Yeah!
Was he Jack the Ripper? Right, just a warehouse, then. And when it comes to sentencing, our judge's approach would be different. Sidney Arthur Higgins, you have been found guilty, my son, of being a prat. You couldn't nick a songbook of a Stevie Wonder, you? However, I do know that your missus has walked out, so there's no point in me wasting £200 a week of the taxpayers' money sending you to the slammers. Your kids will only be out doing warehouses themselves, won't they? So here's what I'm going to do. I'll pay you that £200.
Oh, tell very much.
Hold on. In return, you have got to take that washing up liquid you nicked and go round your estate doing everyone's washing up. And you don't stop until all 400 crates are used up. And our judge's attitude would also be very different towards other sorts of criminals. Right, next case.
Kevin and Ian Maxwell. Whoosh.
Right, come on in, tell us what happened.
Well, you see, it was like this.
Oh, shut up, who cares what happened? 50 years. That's for having a fat, crooked git as a dad. So, with proper judges who understand crime, understand criminals, understand the police, what would a typical day be like for the common villain?
Right, that's the plan. Now, all we need is a driver.
Aye, what about George?
Don't be daft, he's a judge.
Ah, well, what about Sid?
He's gone straight, isn't he? Got his own washing up business, Higgins and Sons. Ah, what about Hacksaw Perry?
No, he's working with Mother Teresa on a new irrigation project for growing grain in Sudan.
Oh, well, looks like we're the only two criminals left in the whole world, thanks to the constructive sentencing policy of these new judges, as proposed on that Radio 5 programme.
All right, you two, time for a confession.
Oh, no, we've been rumbled.
No. It's my turn to confess. All right, then, I admit it. I'm a useless copper and have cracked under your perceptive questioning list. I have therefore retired and got a bit part in Inspector Morse.
Blimey, copper, you'll be more famous than Gazza.
Gazza? But hasn't he been transferred to Lazio, where his brilliant midfield skills will be severely tested by the physical nature of the Latin temperament, Jimmy? Now, would anyone like a pet weasel? I'm about to set it free.
So, all that could happen tomorrow if only we had ex-convicts as judges. But it's entirely a matter for you. All those in favour of our proposal? And all those against? All right. I suppose we'll have to abolish voting as well, then. That's all from the Mark Steele Solution. Good night.
Night?
The Mark Steele Solution was written by Mark Steele and Pete Sinclair, who also performed it with Tracy Russell.